Nearly got a try on that left-hand side. What happened?
Oh, but I've gone up and over and bloody head over biscuit. It wasn't enough stability there for myself, but no, I was busting for a bit of meat this game. It didn't seem to work out.
Hello, cheers, and welcome to the Scrum of the Earth, the weekly show that brings you news, reviews, great interviews, and many other things that rhyme with ewes. So once again, I'm very pleased to have one of my favorite recurring guests here, and that is, of course, Craig from the Scottish Rugby Podcast, or as I've started calling him, whether he knows it or not, I've recently dubbed him the Craig Man, as in, I am the Craig Man, they are the Craig Men, John loves the Warriors, goo-goo-goo-joob. How are you doing,
Craig? Hi, how are you doing? Yeah, doing great, my friend, doing great. Just as we just discussed earlier, just finished work, so I'm ready for a nice, decent weekend this weekend.
That's fantastic. And you and the whole family, you've got to be over the COVID by now, I'm guessing?
Yeah, doing great, thanks. We're all recovered fine and back to strength. And not too bad at all. Thanks for asking.
So last night I was scheduled to have a chat with Dallin Stanford, whose current job title is listed as the voice of the Free Jacks. But we had to reschedule because we had yet another power outage at Casa de Scrum here. I was trying to work out how often that's happened because we lost power on Christmas Eve last December. And I think it's happened three or four times since then. I finally came up with a theory. Maybe it's like bring your kid to work day once a month for the power company. And it's like, Christopher, don't touch that switch. Christopher, I'm warning you. Christopher. It's solid there, right?
Yeah, it's amazing. Actually, I saw something. I think it was, I was watching John Oliver one time, and they were discussing the power grid in America and how it's not really fully matched up to, you know, it's not one whole grid as such, and it can be subject to shortages, and you know, we're very lucky over here that we're all kind of linked up, so it has to be something like a lightning storm or a transformer breaking down or trees taking the lines down that will cause a power outage for us.
So you mean you have electricity in Scotland now, is that right?
We have electricity in Scotland, thank you very much.
I assumed you just put on your wooliest jumpers and kind of just rubbed against each other until the clock turned on or something.
Well, currently the way the prices are going for our electricity and gas, they're currently talking about something like your home bills going up between £500 and £600 a year.
Oh my gosh!
Because they've lifted the cap that the government had given the power companies, and the power companies can charge anything they want. So they were going to go up anyway, and then all of a sudden we've obviously had the issues with Ukraine, and the power companies are using that as a very good excuse to charge us more. So it's going to be quite difficult. So we're all actually starting to wear more thicker jumpers and things like that because it's absolutely horrendous. Some of the horror stories that we're starting to hear about families really struggling. It's going to be a tough time for us.
Wait, so you're saying a company, when the restraints are lifted, would act sort of irresponsibly and start gouging people? No way. Is that
you wouldn't believe it, would you? You know, you wouldn't believe these power companies that apparently it's because that this is exactly what the power costs, but it's as usual, they're making all these massive profits, etc., you know. It's going to be one of those ones. I don't think it's going to be great for us at the moment. We're currently, you know, even for example, just a tank of gas is now costing us £20-30 more.
Gas has almost doubled here in the last month in the Putin war time.
So it'll be interesting. Anyway, we'll try not to be that negative.
there's a whole still game episode where Winston figures out how to stop the power meter from turning, so he's free to use as much power as he wants. So it's a classic episode.
There'll be a few of us starting to run lines to the street lamps, and we'll only have power when it's dark.
Well, years ago, I moved to Providence, Rhode Island to start a new job. And I only moved into my apartment the day before. and hadn't had a chance to get electricity set up yet. So I sort of in the process of moving in, I'm like, oh wait, I don't have a single outlet that works here, and I need to get up in the morning, so I need a clock radio. And so I ended up sort of running four extension cords from the outside of the house, where for some reason there was a plug on the outside of the house that must have been from somebody else's property, and I'm just praying that nobody unplugged it in the middle of the night for some reason. I had to do a lot of improvising that day. I think I used that same extension cord to then heat up water in a coffee maker, mix it with cold water, and that was my shower. So it was a fun starting day.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Anyway, that's obviously what we were here to talk about. So thanks very much, and I'll talk to you soon. No, I am wondering, can we quickly do, you know, quickly for us at least, do a little bit of a postmortem on the Six Nations? It already, somehow it feels to me like it's just ancient history, but that might be some sort of self-preservation, you know, instinctual thing kicking in. Are you numb? How do you feel after the fact?
It's a difficult one. I think a lot of us, including the guys on the podcast, the Scottish Rugby podcast, I think we're all just a bit kind of, well, we're back to 3 years ago, we're back to 4 years ago, and we're back to the bad old days, or we're just back to normal Scotland, normal service has resumed. it's a shame. We're all hyped up, and I think we spoke before, and we really thought that this was the time that Scotland were going to perform, and they haven't. And unfortunately, it's been the senior leaders within the team that haven't performed, and they're the ones that drive the standards for the rest of the team. So yeah, it's been difficult. But luckily, I've got we've got two things going on. We've got the URC, where our two, well, especially my team, Edinburgh, doing well, and also we've got the start of the TikTok Women's Six Nations now, which is Scotland, the Scotland team looked to have got better, and they're really showing some good skills. So yeah, hopefully
the podcast you guys put together all about the Women's Six Nations, it was really great. I thought the coverage was great, and it's funny because I did watch the Scotland game that weekend, and it was super hard to watch just because they were, you know, it was such a beatdown. But I felt completely different about it after hearing your analysis. And you know, I thought it was great that you were able to find really positive takeaways from it. I mean, England are just kind of in a different class, I guess.
Yeah. Well, the big issue we have at the moment is that England have, you know, 30-odd professional players. They've been working on this for you know, the last 8 years, and they are a strong women's team. We now have some professional players, but when we call them professional players, they're being paid a small amount of money. It's not a huge amount of money. They still, and also they're also being paid by their English clubs that they're playing for now, because a lot of them have gone to the Allianz Premiership 15. Mm. So, but what that does is, in comparison to our male counterparts within the Scotland Six Nations team, as we said on the podcast earlier on, the girls are they're building and building and building. So there's no, they are all in it together. They're all, they have to still fight for a fair bit of equality within rugby as a whole. So they're all working together as a team to get better and better and better. Whereas with the male team, they say they're working hard and wanting to get better and get to it, because that's what they say at the end of every game. Oh, well, you know, we may have got beaten, but, you know, we've been working hard and getting better and this, that and the other, but they're not going forward. I think it's an exciting time for women's rugby and rugby in general in Scotland.
Well, you know, just as a semi-outsider, in my level of perception, the sort of, I don't know, the widespread awareness of men's rugby is kind of staying the same, but the awareness of women's rugby is on a massive upswing. I feel like I hear more about it all the time. I feel like people are just taking it much more seriously. Just in the last year, I would say, than ever before, it really feels like it's on the forefront of people's minds instead of an afterthought.
Yeah, very much so. You know, we've in the Six Nations sort of era or area, because we've got a fairly big title sponsor in TikTok, they have allowed us to, they're opening up the game to a lot more of the youth of today, who are the ones that we want to come through and be brought through. But also it's opening the women's game up to a lot more people who have never watched it, have never thought about watching it, etc. So yeah, it's going to be really exciting. And it's building. So yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Well, speaking of senior leaders who underperformed, I do have to ask, what do you think about the future of Stuart Hogg with his squad? We've already both talked about it on our pods, you know, everything that went down with Edinburgh Gate after the Italy match. Hoggy wasn't in the squad for Exeter this past weekend. His coach there hasn't given any signs of being his biggest fan in the first place. Is this the start of Hoggy sort of falling off a cliff here? Has his stock plummeted as far as it seems? Or am I just completely overreacting with this?
Oh, it's difficult. I've been very vocal on my disappointment. You know, he's the one that's, we've talked about it before, he's the one that should be leading standards within the team. He shouldn't, you know, but on the other side of things, we're seeing a few more reports coming out over the last couple of days saying that, you know, there's been a little bit of ambiguity from what Tooney has set out, what the SRU and the coaching team were expecting and what the players put. So there's a lot of people starting to defend Hoggy a little bit. Mm. And also when he was telephoned by Gregor Townsend, they immediately came home, apart from one player, and we can let you all guess who that player was. So there's lots of rumours and lots of talk going around. I think now we need to draw a line under it. The SRU wanted to draw a line under it and actually deal with it without it going to the public. Unfortunately, it was leaked out to the press the day before, so we may have not known anything about it if it hadn't been leaked. So maybe we need to just draw a line under it. I don't think he can be captain again. I think he'll not be captain again. I think he needs to concentrate on his own game. And it would be great to see him back to his old self and just playing as a 15. But yeah, we'll see what happens.
Because at the end of the day, he's such an exciting player to watch. But some of the, you know, so obviously in the game versus Ireland, we had another one of those, no, I'm not going to give this pass where I definitely should. I'm going to try to take it in myself. And ended up walking away with no points out of that. And then there was a sort of a pretty big momentum shift after that.
Yeah.
Do you think that that was a moment of Stuart Hogg saying, okay, I've been getting all this bad press all week. Let me show everyone I'm still here for them. I'm still this great player. And just being a little too selfish in that way. Or to me, it feels like that moment happens too fast for him to be thinking of it that way. And it was just a mistake. You know, is there a larger picture that went into that particular play? Or
no, I think for you know, everyone that watches it and everyone that's commentated on it, unfortunately for Hoggy, it's just this has been his style of play for some time now.
Yeah.
Because especially when he became captain, it was almost like, look, I'm going to have to do this myself, even though he doesn't have to. And so a lot of the time he's taking the ball into contact when he shouldn't be. He's not passing the ball as much as we, you know, we keep saying he's running up a blind alley on a regular basis. He'll take the ball and then run at them and run at the defences, but unfortunately he doesn't offload when he needs to. I think it's just overplaying. And I think it's just a build-up of being captain, trying to lead the team on the field to show them that, look, I can do this, so can you. But unfortunately, that mentality is... Scotland are a better team now. They don't need that mentality. They don't need the Sergio Parisi way of playing. Of you know, he basically led Italy for many, many years and basically stopped stopped Italy being scored on or as much as they maybe should have been because Parisi just kept them running as hard as he possibly could. So I think Hoggy's kind of falling into that sort of captain label. And actually, all of us just want him to return to his old ways of playing very, very well, forget about the captaincy, you know, rest after the amount of rugby he has played, come back stronger and return to the old days of hockey, you know?
It reminds me of Boxer, the horse from Animal Farm. I can work harder, just, you know, always coming back to that.
Absolutely. Well, you need to look at, you know, for example, if you equate it to the English game, if you look at Chris Ashton, for example.
Okay.
Chris Ashton has come through, played for England, got a really bad reputation, has moved to many different clubs because he's never really either fitted in or he's had problems within the club setup. He got to a point where he was out of a job for 3 months, and he's taken stock, taken some time. And now he's back into Leicester. He may not be being paid as much as he's used to being paid, but he's actually just back to. There's no more Ash Splash. He's just going there to score tries
Ash and splash, wants like
to. Yeah, he just wants to enjoy his rugby, and I think that's where Hoggy is needing a little bit of a reset. You know, hit the reset button. You know.
Well, there was all this talk, you know, people speculating that he was going to France and stuff, and then he made the talk much, much worse by saying, "I am definitely committed to finishing out this contract," which has like 3 months left in it or whatever.
Yeah.
So where you live, you actually see, you know, things like articles in newspapers and periodicals about rugby. I don't have that here. Have those rumors continued at all? Is there talk about, you know, whither now, Hoggy?
At the moment, no. At the moment, so all the conversation about his where he will be next year have disappeared because everyone's busy talking about him going out for a few beers and his performance over the Six Nations. So I think once all of the press and pundits like ourselves get kind of fed up or have talked too much about the beer situation, etc., we'll return to that eventually. But as I say, he wasn't playing last weekend for Exeter, and Exeter are having a real up and down season at the moment. So
for sure.
I don't know whether they've just decided to rest him, and we'll see if the team goes up.
I admit that they're playing this weekend and I haven't even looked at any of the rosters. I don't know if he's in the 23 this weekend.
I haven't seen it either, yeah.
So you coach rugby. Can you tell us just briefly, like, who is it you coach and how does that work?
Well, when you're a member of a Scottish rugby club, usually you get leaned upon if you've played for a certain amount of time, and then you're obviously your son or your daughter start wanting to play rugby. It's usually assumed if you've been a member of the rugby club and played for the rugby club for a length of time, if your son or daughter want to start playing at primary three, which is the age of around seven, it's usually you're given a bag of balls and a set of cones and said, well, you know, you're going to be, you know, if you're going to be bringing your son or your daughter up to training, you may as well just coach them. And so you're given a bag of balls. Congratulations, you're the coach along and I started with my son all those years ago with four other dads coaching their sons. And the way our rugby team, which is the Howard Fife, is our club in Cooper and Fife, just north of Edinburgh. The way we work is that we follow our kids all the way through. So we go through P3, P4, P5, P6, P7, and that's when it then goes to high school. So they're about 12, 13 when they go to high school. And you then continue S1, S2, S3. And then when you get to S4, it becomes under 16s. And then S5 and S6 becomes the under 18s, so you've got 2 years with them. And so I basically have gone through that pathway with my son's team. Missed a couple of years when my son finished playing rugby, and I had something else to do, which I'll talk about in a second, not to bore you all. But and then I've come back to the under 18s, the under 16s, and then under 18s, and I'm currently coaching with that team and the group of coaches at the moment for that team. But I also 8 years ago, started the women's team at the Hour of Fife.
It was the beginning of that team in general. Okay.
Yeah. My wife and I started the team, and we went from what they call a development league. So you build your team first, and you try to get people involved playing women playing rugby, and then you then get the permission from the SRU to enter a league, which is the development league.
Okay.
Which basically you all arrive at a rugby club. All the teams arrive at a rugby club, and if you've got 5 players with you, or you've got 15. We mash them all up and make sure everyone gets a game.
Wow.
And they get to play rugby. And then you go from there to, you enter League Division 2, which is a national league. Well, it was a national league at that time, but it's now a regional league. And you play all the teams that are around you. And then you gain promotion, which we did. And we went into National 1. And when I left last year, the Howe Harlequins were at 4th place in National 1. And they finished at 4th place in National 1. And then if they gain promotion again, they go to the Premiership, which is the top level. So
you must be really proud of that. That's pretty remarkable.
Quite a phenomenal group of women that I've been involved with. We've had 4 girls go through Scottish Futures. One girl who went off to Loughborough University and played for Loughborough Lightning and was on the pathway for England rugby, but she's through injury has stopped that now. And also Nicola Howitt, who now plays for Sale Sharks, she also was capped by Scotland as well. We've had some success, although don't get me wrong, Nick Howitt, we had a very small part with her. She was one of the first girls that joined us when we first started. Mm-hmm. And then she went to university and she went off to Edinburgh Uni. And Edinburgh Uni are a very, very strong university team and are within Scotland's pathway. So women and girls choose to go to Edinburgh University just because of their rugby setup as well. So Nick went there. So we've had a very small part in Nicola's journey, but Nicola Kate used to come back and play for us now and then and play in the Sevens tournaments and things like that for us as well. So we're very proud of that.
Yeah, you must be so pleased about that. That's really remarkable.
Yeah, it's been a great journey, and Cordelia and I, my wife Cordelia and I, she eventually started playing for the team as well, and until she decided that after an injury that she would rather just be a mum and the team manager. Mm. Really, really proud of it all. We've worked really hard. The club have worked with us, I'm very lucky now to have left it in the hands of a younger and more diverse set of coaches, and they can move it further forward. And I'm happy to step back. And then I've got another season with the under-18s next year, and then I will be done.
Really? Okay. Do you feel like you get better at it every single year?
You have a choice with coaching. You can be at the sidelines and you can give your advice to the boys and you can stand there and put cones out and take them through their drills, etc. Or there are other coaches who will go through the SRU, the Scottish Rugby, have a very good coach development program, which is all free of charge. Apart from some of the main qualifications that you do. So they'll bring, you can go along to Murrayfield, or they'll have regional events that you can go along and you know, for example, they've got one coming up. It's like a big meeting at Murrayfield where we'll have coaching sessions with Gregor Townsend and with defence coaches. I remember I was down and got a scrummage session with the scrummage coach for Edinburgh, Stevie Scott, a few years ago. So you can develop yourself as you go along. And I'm a coach, they've just replaced the qualifications, but I'm a UK level 2 coach, which is mid-level, the next one up. Before the new coaching qualifications came out, Gregor Townsend was a UK level 3 coach. Okay. But now they've got an equivalent of a UK level 4 now, which is what he's on. And so that's how you kind of judge yourself on your level of coaching. So you can either push yourself and invest in it, or or you can just stand there. I'm not trying to detract from what the guys do, but you can. It's up to you how much input you want to put in, how much work you want to put in.
So with that coach's hat on, and I don't want to make it the Stuart Hogg show or anything, but the problems we were just describing, we've seen that have seemed to be becoming habits with Hoggy. Is there a stage or an age, you know, in somebody's playing career where they can't be coached anymore, but like they kind of, they're full? Like, is it still fixable? If you were Stuart Hogg's next coach, would you feel like this is something I can help him fix? These are work-onable things.
It's difficult.
Obviously, he'd have to be on board. He'd have to want to change, right?
Yeah, well, that's the big thing. We talk about coachability all the time. Is a player coachable? What's the coachability of the player? And if the player's open and willing to learn, then you have players who will act like sponges, and you talk to them about something, they'll ask a lot of questions, and then they move on, they do it on the pitch, and you go, right, okay, that's fantastic. We also have players that you talk to them, they nod, they look like they're taking it in, they do what you ask at training, and then when they go onto the field, when they're playing, the rugby red mist just descends, and they go off and do exactly the same thing as they've been doing all their time, and you're like, oh, you know, come on, you know, we've talked about that, we've done that in training. So the problem you have with Stuart Hogg is, and I think I was very down on him a couple of weeks ago, and I'm worried that he's developed this sort of, he's believing his own hype. And people are telling him he's the best 15 in the world, and so he started to believe that. And when they start to believe that, they then start to, the coach, whatever they're being told by coaches, starts to go in one ear and out the other, and they think they can do it themselves. For me, my first, if I could never be Scotland coach, but if I was one of the coaches for Scotland, the first thing I would do is drop him. And say, right, well, you're not too big, you know, you're not too big to sit on the sidelines. And then
it seems like that would have been the move against Ireland. I feel like that would have been a perfect time.
Well, this is what falls into the ambiguity side of things, and this is where I wonder, you know, was the message not put across to them as well? Because the reason, from what we're being told, the reason he played was that there was a telephone call from either Gregor or someone within the team saying, get your butt back here.
Right.
You're not supposed to be out. And they came back. And the only person that didn't come back didn't start on against Ireland. He was on the bench. So I think...
So that was the message?
That was the message. And I've got... So you kind of have to think, well, maybe Hoggy maybe that group have made the decision to go out because they thought they could, and then all of a sudden they've been just hauled back in. There's so much going on in Twitter. There's so much going on in social media that
I've seen almost diametrically opposed accounts of what actually happened that evening.
Yeah, yeah. Until Hoggy actually comes out and talks about it and says, this is the issue, this is what happened, and we get the full story, then it's going to rumble on and rumble on. And it's a shame because he's been such a good player for Scotland. He's now the try scoring record holder.
Yep.
You know, the last thing we want is to.
He was even when he broke that record too. He basically immediately said, "Oh, that I'm not going to keep that record. Somebody else is going to have that record." He was eating humble pie about it. I thought that was pretty great.
Well, if you look at him whenever we win, when the trophies are presented, he always looks for the people that have either had their first cap they always get the trophy and they're always in the pictures.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, he wouldn't be Scotland captain if he wasn't a good captain. The problem you have is that when you get to that point where you believe your own hype, then you think you can do what you want, or you can get away with things that maybe you shouldn't be getting away with. I just don't know. But I think there's more pressure on Gregor Townsend than there is on Hoggy now.
Yeah, that's a great point. So do you suppose, is it that every single time there's a Six Nations match, do you think Finn Russell's dad is like, okay, got to make up the spare bed?
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Start warming up the car, honey.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he puts the beers away and thinks, right, okay, I'm going to have to sit up tonight and just watch the TV with a nice cup of tea and wait on them phoning me. Yeah, it's
maybe just that, drive straight to George Street and just kind of wait so he doesn't have the commute.
Yeah, it's just. Don't get me wrong, you know, if I'm a single guy or a guy on my own out in France, you know, I would miss my parents, and if things aren't going too great and I've had a fair skinful, to be honest, I think I would probably end up back in my hotel room. I don't know if I would for my mom and dad, because I'd never live it down with them. But it's an interesting one. I honestly just don't know.
But, I just want to know what his room looks like too. Is like the teddy bear waiting for him on the bed when he gets there? Yeah.
all the little trophies, you know, it's made out as a Finn Russell shrine now for his mom and dad. It's got his Scotland shirts on the wall and everything, you know.
Participation trophies.
Yeah, little toy Lamborghinis sitting up in the corner.
Well, anyway, I feel like we've probably dwelled on it too much already. The speculation I was hearing, as you say, the talk seems to have gone away, but people seemed fairly sure that Stuart Hogg was going to go to France next year. On one hand, I feel like that could be exactly the kind of reset you're discussing, and that maybe that's exactly what he needs. On the other hand, that would be the worst for me, because I can't watch the top 14 here, and I would never see him again except for like those five games a year for Six Nations.
Well, the thing is, the big question you have is if you look at what Finn Russell's going through just now, he played Six Nations, then a couple of more games. They finished up in the European leagues because they got into this semi final or final with Racing. Then it was out on the Lions tour. Then he was back. It was the autumn tests and top 14. Then it was. Then he's back to the Six Nations. You know, he's not had any rest, and
right.
And no matter how much money that they are offering to pay you, you have to look at that and say, is it worthwhile? Because Hoggy's already getting this sort of. We're already talking about Hoggy, Ali Price, Finn Russell all being burnt out at the moment in time.
Mm.
So is a move to France a wise thing? You know.
Yeah, it's my understanding that if you go to France, it'll be, you'll live in a lovely place and you'll be in a really fun league and you're going to get paid scads of money, but they really burn your candle at both ends there. They you know, they're like, well, we're paying you now. You're going to be here no matter what. And it sounds like a brutal league.
Well, there's Chris Ashton again. He was being interviewed by Jim Hamilton on Rugby Pass, and they were talking about, he went over to Toulon, a big money move. He was going for 3 years, lived on the beach side, had a beautiful place with a pool, him and his wife, all set up, had a phenomenal season, broke the try record for the top 14 in a season.
Wow.
But his, first of all, the owner of the team is still a maniac. Okay. He's an absolute crazy guy. You know, you don't expect the owners to be talking to the players and telling them what he thinks of them. You know,
that's
what the coach's job is, but he's involved there.
That's a Jerry Jones with the Cowboys kind of thing.
Absolutely. But the other thing is, these, you know, they're forced to be on a bus for 9 hours to go north to play in Paris or wherever. They play their game, they get something to eat, they're back on the bus in 9 hours back, and they're getting home at 3-4 in the morning. So, you know, he was just fed up of that. He couldn't deal with it. And they do burn the candle at both ends when you're playing out in France, but they get good money for it, you know?
Yeah. It's also one of it's fun. The fact that it sounds like it's so difficult is one of the reasons I really long to be able to watch it as well. But
yeah, it's a, you know, I'm lucky. We have that on, Premier Sports, who are a pay channel over here, that cover the URC. They also show the top 14 matches, and we all laugh about it because they're, you know, you watch a load of rugby on a Saturday night, a Saturday during the day. You come, you know, you have a couple of beers, you have your dinner, and then about 9 o'clock at night, on comes the French. Because for some reason they play them at stupid times at night, you know.
Well, I'm a super rugby fan, and that's one of the best things about it is you're like, oh yeah, I wonder who's playing this week. Oh, the Highlanders just played at 2 a.m. I can watch it right now.
Yeah. Well, over here with us, because it's usually the morning, a Saturday morning, we usually get the their Saturday afternoon games played. Yeah. So we can be up at 8 o'clock in the morning having breakfast watching a super rugby game. So it's pretty good.
So I want to tie a quick bow on Six Nations. I do want to end on a positive. If I could think of one thing that I can take away and think, yeah, this is a really good sign. I really like this or whatever. Ben White is a good start for me. Mm. I guess both Bens, Ben White and Ben Vellacott, those were two positive things for me. What's a positive takeaway for you?
I think for me, it's the lack of drop-off. We've now got the ability to put a bench on that. Okay. we know that we're not going to have a drop-off in level of play. We talk about it on the pod, and I laugh about it, about depth, but we've got a great amount of depth within
what was Scotland. It you guys called the BAM squad?
The BAM squad instead of the bomb squad. So it's pretty good that way. But I think also Rory Darge has emerged on the international scene and has really made his mark. And we seem to be in a situation now where playing two sevens isn't looking as bad as people worry about it. It looks like it's going to be a good thing for us. And I think also Matt Fagerson, although he's injured at the moment, he has cemented the number 8 shirt on his back, I think.
Where's Jamie Ritchie with his injury? When are we going to see him playing again?
It'll be start of the season next season.
Oh, wow.
He may make the summer tour.
That was my question, yeah.
Yeah. But from what I know, he was looking forward to a full pre-season with Edinburgh. And I think that's what he's aiming for at the moment.
Oh, dang. That's a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So if we can get over to the URC a bit. So it's a brand new competition in terms of branding this year. As you well know, it's 18 rounds total among 16 teams. We're somewhere between the 13th and 15th round, depending on which team you're talking about. Obviously, right now, Leinster and Ulster, not surprising, 55 and 50 points to lead the league, and then followed by Munster. All three of those teams look really strong. But then you've got that Gordian knot. You've got both Scottish teams right in a row. Glasgow are leading Edinburgh, but only by 2 points. And when you're looking at the table, it looks like that difference might be down to the draw that Edinburgh had one game this year. That must have been painful. Do you recollect that draw? And, do you think that's the difference this year?
Yeah, I think if I remember correctly, I'll have to think back what game it was. But we had I have it on my URC app here. I should know this. It's terrible. What sort of Edinburgh fan am I here?
It's not like you go to the games or... Oh.
It's not like... Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. Sorry. Yeah. I'll come to it anyway. But the draw we had... I think we were lucky to get the draw, if I remember correctly. And it was a lot of free-flowing rugby, and I think Edinburgh were finding their feet. So for us... Again, we can rest a little bit back and say, well, we're not that we're resting on our laurels, but we are finding a new Edinburgh at the moment, and Mike Blair is taking his time, so we can give him that time because all of the green shoots that he seems to be giving us are positive. So I think yes, we always like to be above Glasgow. But Glasgow have been, they've had a better run with some of the games, but they've also played very, very well against the teams that we haven't played well against. So it's almost to the point of, yeah, we can give Glasgow their place at this moment in time, but currently they're in destruction mode at this moment in time. So I suppose we'll see if we can pick up a few points and get past them.
I did find it, by the way. It was way back in round three. It was Saturday, October 9th, when Edinburgh drew with the Stormers at the goddamn Health Stadium.
That's it, yeah. And I was there. I was there because I wanted to go down, and that's the thing. I remember us going down because we were disappointed because there was no Springboks with the Stormers because the Springboks were still playing at that time.
Oh, right, of course. Oh, wow. Wow, that seems much longer ago than it actually was. Interesting.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So, as I said, you've got Glasgow and Edinburgh. There's only 2 points separating them. Right underneath that, you've got three South African teams just stacked up there, nipping at those Scottish heels. The Stormers, we just mentioned, are first, or closest, I should say. Then the Bulls and the Sharks, they're only 5, 6, and 7 points off, respectively. And all three of those teams have played 13 rather than 14 matches that Glasgow and Edinburgh both have.
Yeah.
By the way, doesn't this seem like both the longest and the shortest season ever?
It really is, because if you look at, you know, that's us, for example, our domestic season is finishing now. That's us starting to play sevens and finishing off cup finals, etc. for the domestic rugby side.
Is that how it works? Is it like seasonally you go 15s until it gets nice out and then you go to sevens?
Yeah, absolutely.
Really?
So that's us. It does. You always think to yourself, if we start playing 15s games in April, the season's gone long. and I think it does feel that way. I think we've been very unlucky again, going down the Edinburgh route. We've been very unlucky to have these games in the middle of the Six Nations window that were promised with the URC. That wasn't going to happen,
right?
Because of COVID and all these different things and cancellations, we've had to play them. So, for example, the game, you know, the dreaded 1872.
Round one of 1872.
Yeah, through in Glasgow.
Eve of a Six Nations match, just silly.
Yeah, it just seemed a little bit. It also, you know, for all the punters that were down playing, I'm sure the Glasgow fans didn't mind paying the money because they saw Glasgow win. But for everyone that's paying their money, they want to go and see an 1872 Cup with all the internationalists playing against each other, you know.
Right.
So it was a shame, but those are the breaks.
So if you look at the remaining schedule, your team, they travel to South Africa this weekend. When is that match? Probably tomorrow, I guess. They'll be facing the Lions.
Yeah.
And then all three remaining fixtures are going to be at the goddamn Health Stadium, the nice little three-match homestand to finish off the stadium. And you'll be facing Zebre, ha-ha.
Yeah.
Then, you know, a very feisty Ulster team, obviously second in the league right now. And then end the season on the capper for the 1872 Cup against Glasgow. Where do you see those matches going? Do you think you're going to leapfrog them again? Where do you think Edinburgh's going to end this season?
I think we'll do well against, obviously, Zebre. I think we'll hopefully take them apart.
Will they get a win this year? Will Zebre get a win?
Hopefully this weekend against Glasgow. I'm not sure. I really am not sure. It seems to be that all of the, there's a talent drain from Zebre to Benetton.
Mm.
And
it seems like it's almost as hard to go winless on a season as it is to go undefeated.
Yeah, very much so. So it'll be a real interesting one. You know, Zebre have got powerful forwards. Both Italian clubs have shown that their forwards have got, they can play a nice piece of set piece work. Their set, you know, scrum, they can line out very well. They can tackle hard. The problem they have is when their defence goes to sleep, or they tend to get tired. They don't seem to be in as peak condition as say a lot of the Irish, Scottish, and Welsh clubs.
I was going to ask you know, as a coach, do you see fitness as a big problem for Zebre? What is their biggest hill that they're trying to get over right now?
I think a mixture of two things. I think because they've always been known as Zebre last or Zebre nil, you know, players don't go there very often.
Okay.
You know, the big players don't go there. They don't have a lot, so therefore they don't have a big gate gate receipts aren't huge, so they don't have a lot of money, so they then don't attract the better players. They've never really attracted the best coaches, so they don't have a massive pool to pull from through the youth system, etc. So it's all kind of it all seems they scramble through and they get on okay, but they're usually last in the league every year.
Yeah.
Whereas Benetton, for example, have changed around quite dramatically. They're bringing in some good players. The crowds are getting bigger. They're performing better. They're bringing in they seem to be developing a good academy. So it's an interesting one. We'll wait and see. But
well, the whole, like, the salary structure in the URC is a complete mystery to me. Like, because of course here, you know, all the major league sports in the United States, it's an open book. You can look at what the salaries are. The agents use it as a tactic to sort of brag about what they're doing and what their players are doing and stuff like that. And yet rugby it's got to be a hangover from the amateur days or something, where they're like, they still don't want to talk about money or don't want to open the books to the public or something. And I know there's some weirdness with, like, Ireland don't necessarily disclose as much about what they're doing. There might be a lot more money in Ireland than in Scotland, for instance, but they're not really required to talk about it. Every couple of years, somebody goes, oh, there was a massive salary cap violation. And we go, what? There was? Really? And they have to investigate. I mean, if you're Zebre, could a new owner who's got deep, deep pockets change everything immediately? Could that person say, okay, I'm going to pay you an exorbitant amount of money. Let's get some big names here. Let's really make this a franchise that people want to come to. Or, you know, I just have no idea how those rules work.
Yeah, they can. There is a salary cap. Don't ask me what it is, because I don't know. Thanks. I'm not entirely sure. I'm sure I'd be lying if I gave you a number. But the problem you have is that, you know, for example, URC, World Rugby, Irish Rugby are all on separate floors of the same building in Dublin.
I've heard this.
And you look at, for example, you look at Irish, you look at, for example, Leinster, for example. Now, okay, fair enough. Leinster's winning and they have a fantastic coaching setup. They have a fantastic academy. So we should stand back and say, well done. You're doing very, very well there. But if you look at how if you look at a Leinster team weekend in, weekend out, it changes so dramatically over each game.
It does.
I think there was a stat 2 years ago or 3 years ago when they won the European Cup. I think they said they used 68 players in a season.
Wow. Oh my word.
So if you think then, how can they afford to use these 68 players and have, for example, Sexton, Tadhg Furlong, etc., all on their books and not play them very often.
Mm.
Whereas, for example, if you look at Scotland, you look at Edinburgh and you look at Glasgow, their international stars play probably 60 to 70% of the URC.
Yeah.
So how can that work? And how, there's no way that they're saying, we're only paying Edinburgh are paying their players far too much then, because we don't pay our players that much. It can't be. You can't be having Johnny Sexton, who's been with Leinster for most of his career, apart from Racing for a couple of years. You can't turn and say he's at that level. He's not getting paid 750,000 euros a year, So it really is a difficult one, because the laws are there, I'm sure, but nobody knows them, or nobody's has dug into them and really got to the bottom of them.
It's funny, you were talking about much earlier. We were talking about the coaching system where you are and how they sort of hand you a bag of balls, and it just reminded me. So my Free Jacks here in the U.S. they have literally started that program this year where because I was really lucky. I got to talk to a guy named Ollie Engelhart on this very pod, and I asked him that same question about, you know, is there an amount of money that would make the difference, or that would take Major League Rugby to the sort of NFL level? Is there a silver bullet of that type that you can just purchase? And he said, no, absolutely not. No amount of money will change anything, because it's just not in the schools yet. It's, you don't just see it at school and participate in high school and middle school and earlier. So they've started that very program where if you want to, and you think your school might be interested, you just send them an email. They'll send you a bag of rugby balls, and then a couple of coaches and a couple of players will show up at your school and start the very first training session. I feel like that's going to make a big difference. I'm not even sure where I was going with that, but it reminded me earlier.
Yeah, and I think just as you say with Zebre, if someone came along with a big bag of money for Zebre and said, right, I'm going to, you know, here's 37 million euros, build yourself a team and let's go and win the URC, you probably will find that the money will last for a couple of years. They'll develop, they'll bring in these massive players. They'll do okay, but you may find that they don't win because, you know, or they'll win, you know, they'll do what Connacht did, for example. Connacht won the URC, well, the Pro 14, and Scarlets were the same, won the Pro 14 once. And then the next season, they were down in the doldrums because they spent the money.
Oh.
And then the players that were playing incredibly well then transferred to other teams because they were getting paid more money.
Right.
And then you're back to square one again. So it's a really difficult situation. That Conor O'Shea, who was the Harlequins director of rugby, he left Harlequins and went to Italy as Italy's head coach, but also he was like a director of rugby for Italy, and he's put some things into place that developed the club game and developed the academy, and you're starting to see that happen now with all these youngsters coming through for Italy now, and I think that's where Italy, Zebre, Benetton, Italy as a whole will work. And I think that's where they point to, anytime you ask about Leinster, they point in the direction of their youth setup and how they work within the local community. And they've got three or four really good private schools around Dublin who basically, that's all they play is rugby. And rugby is the sport in Ireland as such. So, you know, that's kind of how it seems to work. If you have young players coming through a good academy, it will eventually get to a point where you're doing very, very well.
So is the fact that Leinster is basically on top basically every single year, is that a testament to just how great their organization is? Or is it the IRFU wants things to be that way? Like, they've got four teams in this league. Connacht is always on the bottom, and Leinster's always on the top, and I feel like Munster and Ulster kind of flip-flop each year, depending on how many, you know, cards Peter O'Mahony gets that year. Captain Cheap Shot. I'm very glad there's a whole ocean between us, so he doesn't hear me saying this, but I don't think I'd survive a cheap shot from Peter O'Mahony. But, I mean, is the IRFU happy with that? Are they like, yeah, well, you know, down in Galway, it's not as big a deal, so we're happy for them to always be on the bottom. Or do they even think about it in those terms?
I think if you speak to someone within the IRU and say, you know, and ask them that question, they'll point to Ulster and Munster and how they're growing and how they're getting better and how, you know, Leinster are a product of the way they work with the community, the way they have their coaches, etc. Because if you look at Ulster, for example, Ulster's really taken a big jump because they brought in a fantastic coach in Dan McFarland, and they've paid good money for certain players in certain places, and they work very, very well. They're a proper a proper team, as I would say.
Dwayne Vermeulen was the signing this year, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And Marcel Kutsia before him. And if you look, they use maybe, you know, they've got a fairly tight squad. If you look at the team sheet week in, week out, it doesn't change hugely. They've got rotation, but you know the players that are coming on, you know the players that are there. So those three teams, Connacht are the same, Munster, fairly similar. Leinster seem to just have this, that they seem to be in this little world of their own, this Avengers universe that they bring out their new set of clones and they play exactly the same. It'll be interesting to see.
Somebody use the Infinity Gauntlet, or whatever we call it.
Leinster
would be fine. They would be exactly
absolutely. So I think it doesn't stop them. It doesn't hold them back that they are from Dublin, and the Irish rugby are in Dublin, and they have these four or five big colleges around them that play, that are high level rugby colleges. So I think that's probably where you're seeing the big difference with Leinster. Their player pool is quite massive. But I would say what they have to be very careful of is especially the high ups of Irish rugby have to be very, very careful is sitting back and saying we're doing the right thing here, we're done, we don't need to do anything else, we can let them crack on, because you'll probably find that life will overtake them very, very quickly and other teams will overtake them very, very quickly.
Well, you've just reminded me of something I've been meaning to ask too, which is, how big is college rugby? Are as many people going to college rugby matches as they are going to professional rugby matches? Or, you know, of course, the NFL is king here. Yeah. But there are some states that don't have a professional football team. And in those states, almost always, college football just reigns. And I think I read once in Alabama, when the Crimson Tide play, the stadium becomes the second most populous city in the state.
Yeah. Okay.
What kind of eyes are on college rugby?
Not a lot, to be perfectly honest. It's not we have certain...
It's the parents and the families.
Yeah, yeah. And we have certain universities. In Scotland, there's not a huge amount. Edinburgh Uni do a huge... They play in the sort of the university league, but they play all over the UK. They don't... It's not a Scottish thing. They'll go and play Durham, they'll go and play Hartbury, they'll go and play, you know, lots of different... universities all over the UK. They have a league set up, and then they go to a cup at the end.
Okay.
St Andrews Uni seem to be doing quite well with their rugby program. We, for example, Glasgow Uni, we were the women's team, we played in our league. So they weren't in the university leagues. They played in the actual national leagues. So they've got that option to either or. But when it comes to answering your question about spectators, no, it's a very, very, it's just like club rugby, really.
Interesting. So, because here you'll every now and then you'll pass by a house and it'll be like Oklahoma State University, and there'll be a flag and a tarp and all this decoration and stuff, and it's like, okay, this is a family that only cares about college football and this is their thing. Oh, by the way, you mentioned St. Andrews. One of my best friends, he did a semester abroad and he went to St. Andrews, and Scotland was where he got interested in golf, and he got onto the course at St. Andrews just by pretending he was supposed to be there. He and his friend just kind of got dressed and went out there and were like, yep. And they ended up playing 18 holes at St. Andrews.
Well, it's funny that, well, St. Andrews is only 6 miles from my house, so we know St. Andrews very, very well. And I'll maybe have a conversation with you further down, you know, not in the pod, about my father's links to St. Andrews golf. But links to the links. But yeah, it's with it being an open course, you can usually you know, I've had many times our dogs have, because you can walk along the beach just beside St. Andrews Golf Course, and my dogs have been on many a green looking for balls, and they end up coming back with golf balls in their mouths and stuff like that. And, you know, it's quite open, you know, so St. Andrews is a beautiful place, but it's definitely, let's just say that most of the people who are wearing tartan in St. Andrews don't live in St. Andrews.
Well, so we've got these final rounds. The URC website is very difficult to parse sometimes. It's like a tiny little microcosm of the league itself in some ways. So the South African teams that are nipping at the heels of the Scottish teams have five more games, and the two Scottish teams have four left. Where do you think it's all going to shake out? And we've been talking about Leinster. Is it all just a battle to see who loses to Leinster in the end?
Yeah, I think we're going to be in a situation where Ulster and Leinster are going to be playing for the you know, we obviously go to semi-finals, and you know, we go to the sort of a playoff situation within the URC, and the battle at the moment is getting a home semi-final. And so if we can have a home semi-final, I think,
do you think your team can get there?
I do believe, with the run that we have now, that what's left, the only real bump in the road for us, I think, is going to be Ulster. And
you never know which Ulster's going to show up, though. They're a little finicky, or you know, schizophrenic this year.
Yeah, very much so, and they don't travel as well as you expect them to.
Right.
And I think if we can put out, you know, if we can go out with on full noise like we are this weekend, down in South Africa, if we can go full noise for the last four games, there's a good chance that we can get to a semi final and hopefully have a home semi final.
I feel like that three-game end of the season all at home, that means you don't have to go anywhere in between. Everything's going to be comfortable and in your own zone. I feel like that's a huge advantage over Glasgow right now.
Yeah, it really is. And also, you know, one of the biggest things with Edinburgh Rugby right this moment in time is the Dam Health Stadium. Mm. We have really, the club, the team and the fans have really made it a fortress for us. So I really believe that we have the opportunity to turn over, for example, Ulster, because we've got the noise there. We may not have 15,000 like the Kingspan does in Belfast, but, you know, if we can get 7,500 into the Dam Health for those last games, we can really lift the team in it. And you can actually see it. The team are under the cosh, they're defending, and the crowd build. And you can see the chests of the guys coming out and saying, right, well, we're not letting anyone score. Mm. This is home, you know, because Edinburgh has had so long playing in crappy places, bad stadiums, or then Murrayfield.
Or at least cavernous places where they...
Cavernous, yeah, absolutely. So really for us, it's going to be an exciting finish to the season.
I'm really looking forward to it. I think they have a good shot. Those top three Irish teams, though, it's really hard to see anyone getting past them, if for no other reason than they're not just winning, they're putting up 50 week after week after week. Munster in particular, I mean, I might be remembering wrong, but I feel like they've put up 159, 160 points in the last 3 weeks. It's unbelievable what they're able to do right now.
Yeah, they have done well. Munster have lost their way a little bit. I don't think Van Graan has really produced the most exciting Munster rugby, especially that the fans are used to. But I think the more exciting rugby that you're seeing in Ireland is definitely Ulster. That's, I guess, why you're thinking that they're blowing hot and cold, because they are quite an exciting brand of rugby that Dan McFarlane is allowing them to play. So it'll be interesting to see. I think Munster are Munster, and they'll grind you down. And if they get a chance to bully you and score 50 points, they will take it if they can. But I would like to play them at home. I'd like to play them at the Dam Health and see how we get on with them, because it would be interesting to see. But I'm excited about the Ulster game. That will be really, really exciting.
That one's going to mean a whole lot. Out of these last four matches, that's the one that's going to, I think, point the arrow where it's actually going to be at the end of the year.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And we also have the European Challenge Cup as well, that we've got to finish that off as well. So
that competition is so fun and so densely inexplicable. It's like, okay, well, now we're moving to the round of 16 and this side, but that side's just doing this round. And if you guys win, then you'll come back over here and you'll go over there. Like, you need a Rosetta Stone to understand the competition.
Yeah, very much so. All I know is that we've got Poe coming to us next weekend, and we're going to go down and watch that and see how that
works. Are you going to go see in person?
Yeah. I'm only an hour away, and you know, with having the season tickets, well, I get told, kicked in the back of the leg by the missus saying, well, if you buy season tickets, you better be using them. So we'll be down to watch the game, and it'll be a nice. It's great to. That's where the South African games, and that's why I was a bit disappointed when we played South African teams at home, because the Springboks were still playing. We didn't get to see these strong South African teams come into the Dam Health. So that's where I was a little bit disappointed with that, because I wanted to see the Khaleesi's. I wanted to see the...
You want to see Chisholm Colby out there doing his thing.
Absolutely. I wanted to see Detoit... and all these players playing, so we never got the real Stephen Kitsoff is my guy. He's the one I really want to see, and also Ox Nietzsche,
the ginger fire hydrant, I call him.
Absolutely, yeah. These are the players that you want to see live, and unfortunately we didn't get the chance to see them. So
Stephen Kitsoff, aka Scary Weasley.
Yeah, it's the most. I have a laugh with John Anderson, because I think he's the only South African that actually looks like he would fit in Pollock Shields in Glasgow. You know,
he's one of the few humans who has more freckles than my mom.
Absolutely, I wouldn't know. I don't know.
Well, the URC is going to wrap up. Yes, and it's funny you mentioned it too, because the Heineken Cup and the Challenge Cup come back next weekend. It's like right when you get into it, it goes away for such a long time that you forget about it. And then you're like, oh crap, it's back. So, but I always love it. I like the fact that they use different kits. You see these weird uniforms that you never see, and you just get matchups you just never, ever see. And as I've said, since I can't watch the top 14, this is my only chance to see Toulouse and Stade Francais and, you know, and Racing and these teams. It's always just so much fun. I love that tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. The only issue you have is when that you can see which French teams have decided that the top 14 is their priority.
Yeah.
And they put weak sides out in the European Cup, and then you see the other teams like, you know, Toulouse and Racing, who are Racing especially, who are desperate to win it. They really want, so they go full noise. So it's really quite exciting to see. And for example, you get upsets. For example,
I don't blame them for that either. You know, if you know, especially once you know you're sort of out of competition in those cup challenges, why would you risk injury and risk your best players?
Absolutely, yeah. Especially because the top 14 is incredibly hard on players.
Yeah.
You know, they play a lot of games, and you look at Finn Russell. You know, in the down weeks between. In the rest weeks in the Six Nations, he's flying back to France to play.
Yeah,
you know, and he's playing in those rest weeks, whereas other Scotland players are, you know, other Scotland players aren't. They're sitting at home and resting. You know, so
his dad must hate having to drive to France to bring him back home too.
Yeah. Yeah, but apparently, you know, with Finn, it's every time he comes over, he's. I don't know if he's got friends or a personal sponsor. It's usually a Rolls Royce or an Aston Martin he gets to run around in. So
is that right?
Sure, yeah. So I'm sure his dad will quite happily say, I'll come pick you up, son, as long as I get your keys.
Martin. Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Well, once again, I've really appreciated your time. I should let you go. Give me your predictions for how the URC ends this year. Who's in the final and who's going to be our champion?
I'd love to see Edinburgh going to be the champion. I believe we've got as much a chance as many other teams within the URC, but you're going to find it's going to be an Ulster Leinster final, I think.
Here's a weird one for you. So the Super Bowl is usually, cities bid to have the Super Bowl, so they decide that way ahead of time. It's incredibly rare that the city either has a team that is in the Super Bowl, or and sometimes that even has a team. Sometimes this year was really weird that it worked out that it was in LA for a team that's moved back to LA. If the URC final was at a neutral venue, would that change things a little bit? Like, would that sort of take the edge off of the huge advantage that Leinster generally have because they're always playing at home?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. We had, for example, Glasgow were in the final, 3 years ago, and we had mm-hmm. it at Celtic Park in Glasgow. And unfortunately, again, unfortunately, they were beaten by Leinster.
I was watching.
So I'm not entirely sure. Even if they go to a more hostile town, they still win. So I'm not entirely sure. Within Leinster, it's a huge problem. But I think for other teams within the URC, having a URC, just having a saying, right, well, the final for the URC is in Scotland 1 year, it's in Italy 1 year, it's in Wales 1 year, it's in South Africa 1 year, and it's going to
be cool.
It's in Ireland. That would be a better way to finish it, because, okay, fair enough, you might end up with a South African team playing in South Africa in the final, but we're doing that anyway. So, and we are a little bit fed up of having to go to the Aviva.
Yeah,
and watch the final all the time, or
it's a beautiful stadium, but it's not already.
Yeah, exactly. So it'll be interesting. I don't know where the final is actually due to be played this year, but I think anything that increases the visibility and increases the sort of the noise around the URC final, I'm happy to go with you.
Which leads me to my final question too. Season's obviously not over yet, as we've been discussing at length, but this was the first iteration of this new URC, the used to be Pro 12, used to be Pro 14, all these other things. Before the season started, people said, oh, this could be really bad because the South African teams might come in and completely dominate. And then they didn't look good at the start. And then there was the absolute farce with, when Omicron came out, and the reaction to that was so poorly handled, and it's really hamstrung teams like Cardiff in particular, I can think of. But a couple months from now, how are you going to think back on the inaugural season of the URC? Was it a success? Do you like it? Are you looking forward to it coming back with less inconsistency next year? Do you wish things were back the way they were previously? But what's your overall take on the success of the URC?
For me, it's been a good year, even with the issues that we've had. I think we've seen some good rugby. It's much of a muchness. We're going to see probably an Irish team as the winners. But I think it's been interesting with the introduction of the South African teams. Or the better South African teams, because obviously we have had the Kings and the Cheetahs, etc. In the URC or the Pro 14.
I think Southern Kings are defunct now entirely.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting. I think especially the Welsh teams and Edinburgh last weekend got a bit of a taste of the South African teams and how strong they're actually going to be. I think the scoreline that Edinburgh, the win that Edinburgh got, the scoreline betrayed a little bit of how strong the South African, the CLG Sharks were actually.
Yeah.
If you watch that game, they were incredibly strong at the breakdown, their scrummage, they really were quite outstanding. They just couldn't finish.
It seems like there's a lot of depth there too. It does seem like they always have two squads available for every match too.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting. I'm interested about the Edinburgh game this weekend. It'll be, we've gone full noise. We've got everybody back, and the Lions are an interesting team to take on. So we'll definitely get a good, we'll get to see how that works, and then we'll see how Glasgow get on against Edinburgh.
Lions are underperforming compared to the other three South African teams, but they're definitely on the ascendancy. I've seen some really good things out of them in the last few weeks. They are not to be taken lightly, I would think.
Yeah, that's true. But also, if you look at the Welsh teams that have gone to play them, unfortunately, Welsh professional rugby,
it's a mess.
And so I think they've artificially, the results are a little bit artificial because the Welsh teams have played so poorly.
Yep, that's fair. So especially when basically some of those matches, they called me to ask if I could play. That's how low they were on available players.
Absolutely. You know, I got my boots out and dusted them down for a little while to see if they was going to get the call. But I think if we could have a season where everyone is on their game, Benetton, I think next season will be incredibly strong. I think if we can get at least Ospreys and Scarlets or Ospreys and Cardiff, you know, back up to strength, I think it'll, and then we don't have any interruptions, we don't have any games being played during international times, etc. I think we'll have a really good season next season. I think this season's been good, if not a little bit complicated and a little bit hard to follow. But
yeah,
actually, I think we've seen such a good run that with all of the issues that have been going on, that if we can have a season with no issues and some good games, I think it'll be interesting to see how it goes.
If the organization of the URC itself, you know, so it's unlikely that this would happen this year, very unlikely. But if next year the top four teams in the URC are the four South African teams, and, you know, the semifinals are between two South African teams and the finals are between two South African teams, was that a mistake for them? Would they regret this decision to add these teams, or does it enhance the brand? It would be pretty weird for people living in Europe, right?
It will be. It'll be very interesting. Coming from a country that usually we're watching the finals happen elsewhere normally anyway, it doesn't make much of a difference to myself. Although I truly feel that that if Edinburgh can get it right, we'll have a very good chance of a final next year. But I think you'll probably see that if we do have a strong South African season next season, you'll probably find it'll be an Irish team and a South African team in the final.
That's a great point. Yeah, even if they're as good as they could be, Leinster is still Leinster.
Yeah, yeah. And even if Leinster have a bad season, you'll have an Ulster or you'll have a Munster around there, and if we have an outstanding season, you might see an Edinburgh and a South African team, or an Edinburgh and an Irish team in the final. We'll wait and see.
So if you were a betting man, who is the next player who's going to get cheap-shotted by Peter O'Mahony in the next few weeks?
I'm trying to think who Munster are playing,
it doesn't have to be a player.
No, absolutely. He'd probably just get the ferry over in his car and just, you know, have a crack at you when you're walking out the supermarket. Blair Kinghorn's probably on his radar because, you know, he's the one that everyone's talking about at the moment. Oh, no. So you can see Blair Kinghorn getting out his car. Yeah, and Peter O'Mahony doing a Tonya Harding and hitting him with a 4x2 or a piece of metal, you know. Peter O'Mahony is the Tonya Harding of the rugby world.
He is the Tonya Harding of the rugby world. Or the Jeff Galooly, I guess. Craig, as always, so much fun to talk to you. I really value your insight and your time and everything else. Wish me luck tomorrow. It is our second home game of the year for the Free Jacks, who are now leading the Major League Rugby table. Most points, best record, only one loss. And we have 7 more home games to go. We only have to play, I think, 2 more on the road after this. Pretty remarkable. And it's going to be a nice day tomorrow, too, unlike last
year. I was going to say, the weather's just going to get better and better as well, you know? So,
yeah.
Good luck with the Free Jacks. I'm sure Old Glory are going to come and try and, at some point, try and get a little bit better, hopefully, because the SRU have invested.
They're the Zebre of MLR, for sure.
They really are. So it'll be interesting to see how they go this weekend. But no, good luck to the Free Jacks, and hopefully Edinburgh are going to do well. And I think Glasgow will do well, and we'll see how we go. And obviously Scotland women against Wales is going to be a fantastic game this
weekend.
That's
going to be a lot more fun to watch for somebody like me than it was to watch us against England, for sure.
Yeah. You'll see a really strong, you've got two strong teams there.
Yeah.
I'm hoping we're going to see two strong teams there. I don't want to be in a situation where Wales take control of the match. So I really do think it's Scotland's game to lose tomorrow. So fingers crossed we're going to have a good weekend of rugby.
Well, it's so nice too. The MLR has figured out a lot of stuff this year. And one of the things is really enhance that sort of festival atmosphere. So it's not just I show up and there's a game and then I leave. They're trying to make it an all day thing. They're trying to put the games like in the mid afternoon. So you can be there before, you can be there after. And tomorrow they're doing a collegiate qualifying tournaments for sevens. So something at like 9 in the morning, all the way to 4:30 in the afternoon when the Free Jacks actually play, it's going to be match after match after match of these different colleges playing their sevens teams. What a great atmosphere it's going to be. It's going to be so much fun.
Oh, sounds fantastic. It's seven seasons is well upon us, and we've got the Melrose Sevens coming up as well over here, which is a real big event for Scottish rugby.
What is the Melrose Sevens?
The Melrose Sevens, well, Melrose is where Sevens was invented.
Really?
And yeah, and Melrose, they hold an annual Sevens tournament that you get a mixture of professional clubs entering a sevens team, along with invitational teams that have either old or current professional players pop up.
Wow!
And also universities, local clubs. For example, at Howe Fife, we won the league at one point, and we got an invite there, so we got to go down and play at Melrose Sevens. And basically, you go. They've now got the train goes to Gala Shields, which is just outside Melrose. You can get the train there, but usually it was a bus down, and it's a drinking session all day, and you get all these matches. It starts again at 9 o'clock in the morning, and you get all these matches all the way through seven minutes, a minute break, and then 7 minutes again, and you get to see some real professional, some phenomenal rugby played down at Melrose. That's the original Melrose. That's the original Sevens tournament that everything started from.
That is so cool. There's a Boston-based Sevens tournament that it happens annually, and obviously it's much smaller scale, I would guess, but it sounds similar where you have some teams who show up and they have professional looking, kits that are fitted and have their names on them. And then other people who have spray painted their names on a t-shirt, and they're lucky if they all get the same color t-shirts on and stuff. And I got to go once, and it was so great because, just to see it at that level. Also, when you were talking about your coaching, so my wife teaches high school, and one of her kids graduated a couple of years ago, and she now goes to Wellesley College. And while she's at Wellesley, she discovered rugby, and she became part of the Wellesley 15s, who are, like you kind of mentioned, they're sort of at this developmental stage where you get sort of test matches where it's like, well, we're going to put you against this team that we know how good they are, and depending on how you do, we talk about where we can maybe bring you up into another tier and stuff like that. But it's still very much a you sign up and you play kind of thing.
Yeah.
It was one of the best rugby games I've ever seen in my life. We went to go see them. The team they were playing ended up being, like you said, it's like two schools who were nearby couldn't field 15s, but together you could get 15s. So they became a dual squad. It was such a great day. Just being there down on the pitch, hearing the level of camaraderie, hearing the encouragement, the way everyone's supporting each other. Whenever somebody took a big hit, immediately it's like, oh, are you okay? You know, that it's very serious until it's personal. And oh, it was just the best. Rugby at the grassroots level has got to be the best sport to go see.
Yeah, we're very lucky that I guess we get a little bit blasé about it because it's part of the makeup of us nowadays, and we've been playing, you know, since we've been playing rugby for a very long time. But you know, you watch, you know, we've been very lucky. Our under 18s have got through to the final of the second tier of the cup, and you see the joy in you see the joy in the guys' faces. They played the best they've ever played this season, and you see them coming off the field absolutely over the moon, getting a chance to play in a final. It's just fantastic. And then, for example, this weekend we're going through to Stirling tomorrow for the first sevens tournament of the season.
Oh wow!
And
that's
so
that's in Finn's backyard, is it?
Yeah, it is Stirling County. So we get to go down to Ridshoch and be there, and the under 18s are all coming together, and my son's first sevens tournament. He was a big lanky second row, and he performed quite well at training, so he's getting to go and play sevens this weekend. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes, because he came off and absolutely knackered. So saying, I don't know if I like sevens, and I said, well, you're a better man than I am, because I played once in a tournament of sevens, and that was it. I was done, you know. So
it's all running all the time.
All running.
Well, my son has finally become a fan of rugby, and by that I mean he takes my Rugby World Cup replica ball and uses it as his footrest while he's eating. So baby steps.
Yeah, baby steps, absolutely.
Craig, you are the best. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Scrum of the Earth. It's always a pleasure. Thank you for taking the time. I hope you have a lovely night, a lovely weekend, and I'll be rooting for your team this weekend.
I really appreciate it. Thanks for the invite again. I'm sorry I go on quite a lot and talk a hell of a lot and don't, you know, but I...
Not at all. I count on it. It saves me a lot of scripting.
Yeah, well, it's great. It's great to take part and be part of the Scrum of the Earth. I really appreciate it.
I will talk to you very soon, my friend. Have a lovely weekend, and I hope your family has a great time.
You too.
Well, my friends, that does it for another great bonus episode. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. It's always such a great time to talk to Craig. Thank you so much for listening and for reaching out. It's always great to hear from you. As always, if you would like to get in touch, you can simply use Twitter. I am @ofscrum. You can find me at the Scrum of the Earth podcast on Instagram. You can always email me via thescrumoftheearth@gmail.com. And if you can bring yourself to drop me a nice review, that would please me to no end. If you like what we're doing here, there is at least one way you can show your support listed in the show notes for this episode. So, thanks again for all of you for coming along. All of you across the globe, cheers. Talk to you soon, and be well.
It gives me great pleasure to be here today.
All right, that was neat.